smile on your lips, the Darth Vader breath or the Ujjayi breath. And shortly, you've got a little bit of activation, like a bit of a fountain up this way. Which brings us to the fact that our structure does not end above our head or where our skin ends. We have energy fields, energy layers that go above, and the ones that have to do with higher consciousness are organized above the crown of the head. If your consciousness is not particularly expanded and you're stuck in loops and you can't seem to get your life moving, you need to work with the parts of energy that are above your head.
Okay. Okay, you guys, one of the coolest things about traveling is the people that you get to meet. And they're cool. They're cool and they're interesting. The reason for that is the type of person who's off traveling is just kind of a cooler person. Normally in your home, you might come in contact with somebody that the odds, what are they going to be? The odds for the level of interesting, 60% chance that they'll be interesting. You travel, it's like 85, 90% chance. I got into a discussion with a dude from Hong Kong about the Hong Kong Revolution and ayahuasca. And it's like, he's been through both. you know what he said about the Hong Kong Revolution? He goes, yeah, no, I was all into the revolution stuff. But at some point, like, you get a gun pointed at your face from fucking a foot away. And you're like, what am I doing? So he just went traveling. Which Allah leads to the ayahuasca. But you come in contact with all these really interesting, weird people. And I was in a city in the south, sort of like a hiker's area in the south of the Ecuadorian Andes. And I started meeting all these hippies there, these weird hippies. I met a dude. I saw some outdoor music, which was fucking great. I needed it. I really needed it. It was like someone playing the fucking guitar, but like, you know, like the Spanish type guitar, and someone else playing like cello or something, or sitar. I don't know. It was fucking, they were both wearing like long, flowy white robes, but it was pretty cool. And we sat at a beer garden outside, you know, socially distanced and fucking listened to the music and talked. And it was just like, you forgot after a while. You forgot. And it was great. It was great. I miss live music. And I met there. I met a fucking, an older dude from like Wisconsin or somewhere. Who was a fucking knife maker and knife sharpener. There's all these like, it's just a bunch of hippies in that town. There's just a bunch of hippies. Like left and right. And I mean, there's also some retirees, and my mind just started fucking, after meeting him and talking to him, just started fucking firing. And I was like, I got to do a podcast with some of these people. I wanted to do a podcast about retirement, retirement in Ecuador. But then I had to move rooms, and I was stuck right next to just me and this other couple. So me in one room, and then this other couple in another room, and then this view. And that's the view. If you're watching the YouTube, youtube.com/RHJaffer, you can see the view. We're right at the end of this little area. There was a private area for just our place. And we sat there and we talked with this woman named Bonnie Willow. And she is, I don't want to say this wrong, so I'm getting it right from her site. Bonnie Willow has been a clairvoyant energy healer for over 40 years with an international clientele. She teaches ministry and consciousness expansion. So, that's what we're going to talk about. That's exactly what we're going to talk about here. Oh, shit. It's like these mosquitoes hit you and then you get a wound and then they start to peel off fucking like a month later. I should stop and do a little fucking sponsorship read first. But this is also what it says from BonnieWillow.com. Bonnie Willow's work is a combination of the most effective techniques, concepts, and products she has found. Energy healing, psychic, peace minister. She's interesting. And we were talking about different leaves and different herbs, what they do for you, the effects they'll have. I told her about how I was in the edge of the Amazon. And I've told you guys about this and how some guy was like, we have the cure for COVID. And I'm like, okay. He's like, come on in. There's no way politely to not come in. You'd have to be like, no, I think you're gross. That's the only way. You know, even when a homeless guy comes up to you and is like, can I talk to you for a minute? And you want to be like, just get to the part where you ask for money. So I say, I don't have any money. Even though you do have so much money compared to them. Ah, sorry, dude. I don't have anything. All I got is 20s. And you can tell they're like, yeah, dude, a 20 would keep me in business for a fucking week. I could eat for a week on a 20. How many 20s do you have? Like 7 of them in your wallet right now and access to thousands more 20s? Is that right? Hundreds more 20s? And then you just never get to it. And at some point, you just be like, I beat it. And so really, you're telling a homeless guy, you want to be like, no, you can't talk to me for a minute. And be like, why? And you're like, because I think you're gross. And I think you're homeless. You're going to not enrich my life in any way. That's probably what you're thinking. But you can't say that, right? There's no way I could say that to this guy in the Amazon. So I went in, and he gave me his cure for COVID, and he put it in a bottle, and he said, do a small shot of that every day. And I have. I haven't gotten it. So who knows? But he took me on a tour of his little, like, finca. And showed me all his mom, showed me all full Quechua woman, showed me all these different plants and what they do for you and how some help your prostate and some help erections. Others, like with back pain, you can slap it against yourself. Others you have to shred up and put under your nose and stuff like that. And me and Bonnie and her husband and we were all talking. It was just really interesting. And then I was like, Bonnie, I'd love to do a podcast with you. Just talk to you about this whole sort of genre. I don't really know much about it. It's interesting. It's unique and different. And I already know. A lot of you guys are going to be like, she's fucking a witch doctor. She's full of shit, whatever. It's fine. Think whatever you want. It's okay. But for the other rest of you who just want to hear what she has to say, here it is. We're going to have a great time. We're going to listen to it. Before we start, if you don't mind, I'd like to pay some bills. So please, let's have a word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is sponsored by 3Chi, everybody. 3Chi.com, the industry leader in Delta-8 THC products. Not to be confused with Delta Force. 3Chi cannot promise you a hostile retaking of a plane that was taken over by hostages. It can offer to get you fucked up. That's right, everybody. It's 21 and over to purchase. It's not CBD. It's fucking psychoactive. It's going to give you a buzz. A buzz. Fucking dorks. Take more. Get fucked up. Oh, also, please use responsibly. 3Chi and the 3Chi founders, Father Johnson, Sister Teresa, and Father Sam Wilson, all say that you should use this responsibly. But for everyone else who doesn't listen to those fucking Catholics, take 3Chi.com to get fucked the fuck up. If you use Skeptic at checkout, it's 5% off your order. So what it is it's kind of like some sort of weird mixture between THC and CBD. It's supposed to give you less anxiety and paranoia than if you take like a pot edible. But it comes in gummies, tinctures, vapes, oils that can be used to make homemade edibles. Fucking Unabomber. Oils that can be used to make homemade edibles. Yeah, all right, dude. Fucking go fucking kill a cow and make a burger. But anyway, 3chi.com. That's the number 3chi.com to shop for Delta 8 products. Also, just so you know, if you support America, all of these products are formulated by a biochemist and made in the USA with USA-grown hemp. What if that biochemist is just getting fucked up himself all the time? Like, you ever hear about the first guy to take acid and he just took some? He didn't know how much acid was there to take. So he just took some acid. It wasn't in sheets back then. It was just drops. So he just took, I don't know, just a shot, a small shot of acid. You think that biochemist is working for 3Chi? He's just like, wait, what? Like all day. It's like, did you graduate from Harvard? I went to Harvard. Anyway, you guys, use the promo code SKEPTIC at checkout. Get 5% off your order at 3chi.com. Now back to the episode. All right, thank you very much, sponsor, for sponsoring this sponsorship of the Ari Shaffir Skeptic Tank podcast. Without sponsors, we would have no money to pay my staff. School of Peace is Bonnie's fucking school. Damn, she has a lot of YouTube videos up here, too. Prosperity Attitudes, Love, Light, and Business, Business Anatomy. She's a Reiki master, interfaith minister. She's been an energy healer for over 30 years. Well, this is written a long time ago. Over 40 years now. Listen, anybody that does something for 40 fucking years, they know what they're talking about. So I had this on somewhere. Somebody was shitting on Kurt Cobain. It was like, you know, he was kind of a hypocrite. He said he was against the press, but then he went on Rolling Stone. And it was like, okay, so there's two ways to look at the world. You could either go, I'm better than Kurt Cobain. Me, who's done fuck all, is better than a guy who, when Ari listens to his album Nevermind, cries because it's so fucking perfect. You can say, I'm better than that guy. Or you could say, hey, Kurt Cobain's the fucking messenger. He's great at messaging. So maybe there's something I don't understand. Let me read into it. Why would a guy like that go on Rolling Stone? Why would that be? I could say, like, well, he's a hypocrite. Or I could say, hey, this is part of the message. Let me read into it. She's done this for 40 years. I would say keep an open mind and listen to what she has to say. She answered some of my questions very, very well. It was a beautiful talk. And we sat right outside our place with the fucking hills behind us, hills of Vicabamba behind us. I'll tell you what, I'm going to do this. I don't like doing this because... So I read this book. I gotta find it. But I read this book. Excuse me. Somebody showed me a passage in this book about how naming places when you're traveling, Olga Thorpe, something like that, will ruin the place. If you talk about some great restaurant, it's just gonna bring, especially in travel writing, and this podcast sort of is that. It's just gonna bring a bunch of fucking looky-loos there. Olga, author. Olga Torchek, Polish writer. Yep. And she has this thing about naming places when travel writing. Names and places. So I normally don't... I like what she had to say, and I don't like to fucking name stuff. Nah, it's not going to be in there. It's not going to be in there. But the point is anyway, like if you say like, hey, there's some great new pizza place, it's going to be overrun with tourists trying to get the exact same slice that you wrote as a travel writer. And I get that this is a bit of travel writing. So normally I'll say I'm going to leave out places. I'm going to leave out cities even. Just like regions, you know, you don't have to walk in my steps. Just walk. You'll find your own fucking path. But the place we're at said, hey, we're not on booking.com. It's very difficult to fucking get business these days. So if you wouldn't mind telling your friends or posting on Facebook that this place was really solid, it would really do a lot to help my business. And this place was great. So if you're ever in the town of Vicabamba in the southern Andes in Ecuador, it's a place called the Ishkaluma Hostel. The hostel, I think it means in Ecuador, I think it means hotel. They have some dorms, but they also have private rooms and the views are fucking sick. And this was two rooms, a room there, shared giant patio. So if it rained, you could smoke a cigar. We found a tarantula in our bathroom. Bonnie's husband fucking picked it up with a bag. It was crazy. He wasn't scared of it at all. It was nuts. A fucking tarantula right behind the toilet. And you wanted to trap it, but it was on the corner. It was on the corner of the toilet, so you couldn't trap it. Because it could fall through. If it was like on the wall, you could trap it with a fucking... And they're like, oh, it's not dangerous. I'm like, fuck off. You not be dead. I don't know, man. I've seen horror movies when I was growing up. God, I wish I had that quote. I'll find it for the outro. So we sat there in the Ishkaluma, I-Z-H-C, I don't know, A-L. Find it. You got to have to call them, make a reservation. Their website is minimal or whatever. You might have to send them an email. That's what we did. But man, there's a bunch of hiking on the premises right from there. You can go on a few different hikes, like without even leaving the premises. And there's hikes all around. These German guys run it. So they have weird like Spätzle and like weird German food, German craft beer. Great fucking fun bar. It was a fucking sweet ass place. It was a sweet ass place full of interesting people. Solid place to stay for a few days. and you're outside, you're away enough from downtown Vicobamba, you can walk there in like 30 minutes, but like you can also just be away. There's no reason to go in. And it's also like a cab. I took a cab back. It was like a 7-8 minute cab. And it was like, how much? $1.50. This place, some of these places are so fucking cheap. Anyway, so let's start the episode, you guys. Church of Peace and Love, is that what it is? Bonnie Willow. Faith healing? No, I don't want to call it healing. How to meditate. Maybe it's that. Let's just talk about how to meditate. Because she does give me these tips on like how to just get your brain set so you can meditate. So we have a difference of opinion on like how to get there through mushrooms or just on your own. And Duncan shares this lady, Bonnie's opinion. Oh shit, we gotta start. Duncan says, like, because I had this hypothesis that when someone's coming back from a mushroom trip or an acid trip, they start like on their way back, they don't make any sense. They're talking, but they don't make any sense. I'm talking about a heavy trip. They're like, what's all the fucking, the oranges are the oranges to the man, to the oranges. And you're like, what? And they keep trying to say it, but they get frustrated. And you're like, I don't understand you. They're frustrated because they're still off in the other dimension. They're back a little bit. And so they're trying to talk, but they're talking the other dimension's language. And they're trying to translate it through this language. And it doesn't quite fit. It doesn't quite match. So it's coming off in weird, a jarble. It doesn't make any sense. So I always say, like, whatever they say, fucking write it down. Go, okay. Just pretend like you understand them. And then just say, oh, great. Talk to Corey. Corey knows. You got to talk to Corey. I'll tell Corey. Because that fucking place, where all the truth and the way and the light is, they still got a foot on that side. They're translating. So Duncan made this point. He goes, well, Ari, you know, it's just like, it's just your brain being fucked with. So you're actually not in another place. I'm like, correct. I agree with that. And he goes, so if you can get there with mushrooms to this place where you see the truth and the light and the way, you know, he goes, since it's not actually taking you anywhere, it's not like I can't get to Indonesia except if I get on a boat or a flight. I can't just concentrate and get to Indonesia. I can't do it. I need the boat or the flight to get me there. Flight. Who am I kidding? So with mushrooms, though, you're not going anywhere. So you actually can get there on your own. And Duncan's like, and so does Bonnie Willow say, that's what meditation is. Why not just do it on your own if you can get there? Which I sort of agree with. But the other side of me is like, it's because they say like mushrooms are crutch. It's a crutch that you're using. But it's like, yeah, fuck off. So who cares? So I'm using a crutch. That's how I feel. Let me use a crutch. Let me get there. What do I got to practice meditation for all the time? Let me just go, wait 45 minutes, and then I'm there again. What do I need to do it on my own? I can't do mushrooms more than once a month. Anyway, no, that's why. Because you can meditate every fucking day, and you can get there all the time. Whatever. Either way, whatever way you want to get there, fucking get there. We're both on the same team. We're just like, how are we going to get where we're going? So she talks about meditation and how to clear your mind and what kind of healing effects it can have on you. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So one of the interesting people that I've met, I didn't get a chance to do that fucking podcast with this goddamn, what is it called when you go out of your way to fucking convert people? Missionary. I met a missionary. I should have done a podcast with her outside the Amazon. Fuck. And that would have been a good one. But let's not live in the past, all right? Let's not dwell on your failures. Let's focus on your positives. And this is a positive, ladies and gentlemen. You're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. I think it's interesting as fuck. I think this lady is super fucking interesting. A 40-year veteran of all this shit. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Skeptic Tank, Bonnie Willow. How and why to meditate starts now. And we leave their ringing ear. There is no ocean like the one within. Look to the moon, rise with the tides and swim.
That's right.
There is no ocean like the one within.
Uh-huh.
Look to the moon, rise with the tides and swim.
Speak the word. Hyper-accelerated meditation is talk. The reversal of this word, dispersal is thought. There is no difference between thought and talk. Like the blackboard chalk and homicide chalk, they both give outlines. One is designed to outline the mind, the other outlines the body after a crime. Could it be that these two chalks are connected, meaning the body gets outlined when the mind is neglected or poorly directed? Like the teacher with the chalk, or is the teacher the beginning of the homicide we taught? Be selective in your speech, cause the chalk of the detective will teach and has taught each. Knowledge reigns supreme over nearly everyone, nearly every daughter, nearly every son. Ignorance reigns supreme for some. They chase the sum, inviting the IRS to come. Make the connection, choose your direction, use your protection when sexing and hexing. Things come back cause they really never left. If the secret to meditation is found in the breath, then speech is another form of meditativeness. What do you say to this latest rhyme or poem? Some have been known to quiet the mind through
Hi. How's that for an introduction? Hello.
That's the introduction.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you guide me on how much to say, but we were talking here. Just beautiful. I don't know what city's even down there.
That's Vilcabamba.
That is not...
That's Vilcabamba, Ecuador. Yeah. This is still Vilcabamba, Ecuador. This is a little residential suburb.
Oh, okay. Cool. The Potomac of Vilcabamba. All right. And we were just talking about...
Minus the horse ranches.
Yeah, exactly. Potomac is one of the richest cities in one of the richest counties in Maryland. Probably the richest county, Montgomery.
In the world.
Yeah.
Potomac region. Anyway.
It's up. It's where all the standards live and stuff. Yeah.
You could only wish you lived there.
Henry Rollins is from there. Can you believe that?
What is it?
Henry Rollins from Black Flag, a punk rocker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
From Potomac?
And I was like, what?
This is what happens when you're raised on a horse farm in Potomac. That's what you rebel against.
You go the
against.
Other way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You've got to rebel against something, so that's what you rebel against.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're talking about...
My name is Bonnie, by the way. Hi, everybody.
This is Bonnie. Yes. A new friend of mine from Cuenca. How should we get into it?
We have been having a rousing conversation on all kinds of topics related to natural expansion of one's consciousness without using anything exterior.
Yeah.
Without using anything extrinsic to the body.
So can I translate that?
Yes.
How to get there without mushrooms and acid?
Yes.
Okay.
Or anything. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything other than the personal self.
Yeah.
And what I like to do is help people do that, and also enhance their well-being. Learn how to shift their states of consciousness, and learn how to shift their states of how they feel within their body. How their body feels to them, by using your own consciousness, nothing else. You don't have to go to any store and buy anything,
yeah.
Or you don't have to go plant anything and harvest it and prepare it. You just exist using breath and shifting of focus. We can discover that our body and the energy fields, which are also referred to as the electromagnetic fields. Also referred to as the auric field, the aura. There are a lot of different names for different things, depending on whether you want to be scientific or whether you want to use terminology that comes from the India, Tibet part of the mm-hmm. world, or or the Native American part of the world.
Okay, let me unpack some of that. First of all, when you say consciousness,
yes.
I've never fully grasped what that means because I've heard it for decades, but I don't fully get where, like, shift your consciousness. What does consciousness mean in that term?
Okay, consciousness. Gosh, what a good question. I'm trying to think of who that was who said, Gary, can you help us with this one? Who said, I think, therefore I am? Oh, gosh, it's one of the main guys.
It wasn't Eckhart Tolle.
Oh, heck no. It
no,
was
way,
hundreds
way back.
And thousands
yeah,
of
yeah,
years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah. It was a Plato?
Descartes. It may be Descartes.
I think therefore I am.
Okay. We could be wrong, but anyway, it was some one of those guys.
Yeah.
I think therefore I am is one way to word it, and yet I find that limiting. So you have a body, and your body is the thing that is made out of meat and bones and moves around, wiggles. This is a body. However, there is something within the body that still exists, whether you're awake or asleep, And it is the thing that feels emotions and has awareness of, oh my gosh, look at this.
It's pretty great, right?
Beginning of the sunset.
I like how it's all shade to there, and then suddenly bright sun on that mountain, and then back to shade. Like it's
Vilcabamba,
just peeking out through
Ecuador,
a cloud.
This is the place to be. Oh boy. So consciousness. Okay, here we go. You just looked at that. Did you feel like a slight expansion? Like, whoa, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Like a little bit of a breath of puffing out, a breath puffing out from you. Like, whew. That's your consciousness. Your awareness was changed by simply viewing that. And also, I would go out on a limb and say that the spaciousness between you and those mountains, the fact that there aren't a lot of buildings and zooming cars between you and the mountains, also helped you to feel that expansive puff, that gust of, oh, look at that beauty. So the portion of you that has awareness, that can not just register your surroundings, like my body here knows approximately what the temperature is, and it's going to get some goosebumps if it gets cold. It's going to make me, you know, take my sweater off if it gets hot.
Yeah.
That's what the body is aware of. But your consciousness is aware of a whole lot more. It puts two and two together more. It has more dimensionality.
That's cool. I get it.
Yeah. Consciousness is what can grasp so much more than what is right before you.
Okay. And when you shift consciousness, you're talking about shifting consciousness.
Right. Here's an example.
Okay.
A lot of people have experienced this one. Have you ever used the mind over matter technique where you're involved in something you really love? Let's say you're going to go on a camping trip you've been preparing for 6 months, and you leave tomorrow morning, and it's the night before, and you start to feel like you're coming down with a flu. And you say, no, I'm not getting the flu. I am feeling great. And you decide that you're going to say, I feel wonderful. I feel strong. I'm going to go to bed, going to have a cup of, you know, whatever. And you cause yourself to not get the flu that you could feel coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Has that happened?
Absolutely.
Something like that?
Nietzsche talks about it. If you anything you verbalize, if you start going like, let's just say, you know, there's people you don't care for around you. If you just start going, no, Jim's great. No, Jim is great. And every time it just, you suddenly start enjoying Jim's company.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
You could just make it happen.
Yes, exactly.
With some effort.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I've had a few very profound, surprising experiences of that in my life. By needing to be around someone for whatever reason, I have to now work with them for an extended period of time, and they really grate on my nerves.
Yeah.
I just start looking at anything I can say about them. Oh, they're just so cute. That's such a cute little nice... I mean, you might not say cute yourself, but, you know, I'll just say, oh, I just love this thing about them. And I kind of pretend I just love them until after a while I do.
You just believe it. So you've shifted your consciousness.
I've shifted my consciousness towards that person. I've shifted my consciousness towards the concept of getting the flu right before my camping trip. And actually caused my body to not get the flu when it was starting to.
Oh.
Now, this is in line with another concept that consciousness affects physical state. That your consciousness can affect your mental state, can affect your emotional state, as in you just love this person that really irritated you earlier.
Yeah.
You caused yourself to stop being irritated and to love them. Similarly, I notice that news outlets are very good at informing us all who we should like and hate in all these different countries. This person is our enemy.
Uh-huh.
You know, Saddam Hussein, his devil. Well, has any of us ever met him? I mean, do we actually know? I mean, we assume because of the news programs, you know, things about him. But
I don't even know he's a real person.
Yeah,
he could have just been a guy dressing up.
He could have been a guy in a costume, and there never was
one.
Yeah, well, that's right, exactly. And so, this information has come in. We allow it to affect our emotional state. Ooh, grr, bad guy. Let's go bomb him. Grr, and We don't know if he's a puppet in a costume or if he's a real guy or if he's really bad or really good. Yeah. We don't know anything, but we have been led to believe that.
Yeah.
So
I see that with, I mean, I live in Manhattan in a very liberal bubble world, and mm-hmm. you just mention a five-letter dude who's leaving office right now, but like yes. you just mention it and you see people's blood boil.
Exactly.
And I mean, you could be playing spades and be like, I'm trumping that. And people, like, they're just mad.
Define yeah. another word.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And, you know, someone was just saying the other day, what if we actually met him in person?
He'd be lovely. I bet he'd be fine.
Possibly. Yeah. It's entirely possible. Nobody we don't know. I mean, he may have been not, but yeah. we don't know. Uh-huh. You know, we assume he's hideous. We could say, well, what if he's not? Then we could start assuming that he's wonderful if we meet him. And maybe neither is true. I mean, we just simply make assumptions based on information that we've fed, mm-hmm. been fed. Our consciousness, therefore, I'm conscious of all these things that I've heard about various presidential features and political characters and all sorts of things. And so that consciousness affects my mental state. I may have a lot of anxiety about things that are going on before and after elections and before and after people go into the Congress building and, you know, whatever. What the heck is...
Is it Congress?
No.
What
the heck is the Capitol building?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
And we both grew up there.
We knew there was a C. And it affects our emotions, like the people in New York. So we know that what we read enters our consciousness, can affect and does affect our mental state and our emotional state. All of that can then affect our physical state. If you think about...
Okay. Physical state meaning like high blood pressure?
That's what
like,
I was going to say.
Okay.
If you think about the basics that anybody can agree to, if you, for instance, stress about political goings-on of any sort in any country, you are likely to possibly develop an ulcer, possibly high blood pressure, maybe so much tension that you need to go to a massage therapist or a chiropractor or something to work it out or go buy get some prescriptions for Valium or whatever the heck people take. Mm-hmm. So yes, you can enter states of stress, which if prolonged can become dangerous because if the body produces enough, look at the doves, two doves. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. It's just circling around.
Yeah. Look at that. The spots on the back and the blue head. Those are not like New York City pigeons. No.
The air rats.
Statue pigeons. No, those are doves.
Yeah.
So,
those can affect you negatively.
Yeah, so I've kind of led everybody to the points that people can pretty well understand that your body is likely to be affected by things, just the same as if you have been single for a while and you meet a new partner and there's instant clicking and you just go around on cloud nine for some, you know, period of time. Your whole body is different. Maybe your heart beats fast, but you feel like you can do anything, and you can, and you're so happy, and at any, you know, the world is good. You have optimism, so it's affected your emotions. They feel expansive and joyous and soft, and your mind is shifted in that you realize this person may be central. Things feel more possible than they did before. You suddenly begin
walking on sunshine.
We're walking on sunshine.
Yeah.
Yep. So your mental state is affected as well. And then maybe the person decides to break up with you and you're crushed. And anyway, we're just covering the basics here.
Yeah.
That all of these are consciousness. This is not just the body registering hot and cold. I'm tired and or I'm hungry. This is what consciousness does.
Right, because nothing physically happened to you when you fell in love.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Your apartment's the same. Everything's exactly the same physically.
One could say that, yes. The body does produce different hormones and
hi, buddy.
The endorphins and so forth are produced. So that is another really good point, that when your consciousness is shifted by meeting someone, now I would say that your soul and their soul are harmonious, and that is why you have that connection. Because you could walk up to somebody else in the grocery store who has all the same basic characteristics, the same career, the same amount of good looks, the same hobbies as you, as that other person has, but you would be in love with the one and not the other. I would call that a soul synchronicity, someone whose consciousness, the light of which their consciousness is made, it was already familiar to you before that consciousness entered your little fetal body and you were born.
Right.
Okay.
And there was like some sort of magnetic charge with them?
Because you knew them. They were like your bud, you know. They were already your good friend. Or perhaps the two of you had come up with a plan to do this, to meet and marry or something like that. Or you were assigned to one another, or however things work in the cosmos. And so when you meet them, there's this click, there's this recognition, and you go, ah, this feels great being with this person.
Yeah, so, friendships, loves, it's almost the same thing.
Yeah, and other people that you dislike the moment you meet them. Uh-huh. I feel like, yeah, and there's no explanation for it.
It's just like, opposite magnets.
Opposite magnets is what it is. There we go. So you're talking once more about the powerful effects of consciousness. It doesn't mean that that person is actually evil when you have that repulsion to them.
Yeah.
It's just like two magnets. Is one magnet evil? No. You know, if you put the two ends together that don't attract, they will repel.
I remember having a problem with this. In grade school, I was like, you dislike people who have wronged you. That's the only people you dislike. And then in college, I was like, well, that guy didn't do anything wrong to me. I don't like him. And then it was like, I had to tell myself like somehow like, I think that's allowed. You know?
Even though
they haven't wronged me, I still don't care for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like, and I guess it's that.
A consciousness thing. I also find that we often dislike the people who reflect the parts of ourselves that we don't like.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I realized that, I was in my teens. And there was a guy, I still remember his first name anyway, and he just had these characteristics of, like nails on a chalkboard. And I was trying to figure out why does he... And I realized it was everything I didn't like about myself was embodied in him. And so when I saw him, I was like, oh, no, tell me I'm not like that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, you know, it was like a mirror. I go, oh, no, he's like that. And I'm afraid I have those same traits. And so that was when I first was introduced to the concept of people mirroring. Some people will just mirror to you your bad traits, and other people will mirror your good traits.
And so you like them almost better.
I would.
They remind me of something in myself that I like.
Yes. Well, and you could say they bring out the best in me. I would hope that for most people, your partner would bring out the best in you.
Yeah.
So that's like a good mirror, a healthy mirror. If every time you're around that person, you become the better part of yourself. So,
yeah. And so now what are the methods you use to like improve people's consciousness and physical state I'll just tell you, I've had tons of great experiences on psychedelics.
Yeah.
And my friends have too.
Yeah.
And come out of it the next day, it's like, hey, I want to make wholesale changes in my life.
Yeah.
I realized this was worthless.
Yeah.
This was holding me back. That's done now. And it's just like, but you're talking about getting there without that stuff.
Yes. I may or may not have had those experiences myself.
Sure.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But I have a deep respect for what some of my teachers have told me about that. And I have full agreement, which is that mushrooms and sacred plants of that sort, there are a lot of different types, not just mushrooms, sacred plants that will affect one's consciousness, open doors or create tunnels to higher states of consciousness. It is a poor idea to use something else to open your doors for you all the time.
Right.
Must you hire a butler every time you want to go in and out of your living room? You got to.
Good analogy. Just because a butler might assist you here or there doesn't mean you need him
all the time. Yeah. Yes, I got to go take a shower. Hey, you, butler, you know, open the bathroom door.
You ever see like a really rich person and then they're staying in a place where it's like, yeah, you can do the laundry, use the machine. And they're just like,
I don't know how to do this. And you're like, what happened to you? You dropped that muscle completely?
I've seen teenagers that way.
Yeah, exactly. When I got to college, it was that. You could see the, like, the really rich kids, and they would just stare at the machines and then look at me. I'm like, I'm not helping you. Ask your mom. I had to do my own laundry for years. Figure you can ask your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, a more important point is not which plants or plants. I would say that's a pretty good overall word. Which plants can help you shift your consciousness? But how about how can you remember what the plants did for you and shift yourself?
Yeah.
Because okay, if I drove you to the mall one day so you could buy something, chances are good you could find your way to the mall again because you've been there once. Or maybe not. I might have to drive you there two or three times and then you've got it.
Yeah.
You don't need to keep having me take you to the mall. You know, at a certain point, you want to become capable of getting there yourself. That is a silly example.
No, that works.
That's what we're doing here is breaking it down.
Yeah.
So to me, it's vastly more important to... Here's another
one. Also, they're hard to come by sometimes.
What, people to drive you to the mall?
No, those plants.
Oh, the plants.
Yeah,
oh, sorry, right.
Absolutely. The people that drive you to the mall. In this
people
analogy.
That drive you to the mall, too.
Sometimes you're like, there's none in the city. There's nobody in this city right now that'll drive you to the mall.
Right.
So if you want to get there.
Yes, you got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Here's another analogy. How would it feel if you went to the gym, lay down on some little table slab thing that they might have, and somebody came over and said, you want to exercise? And okay, good, picked up your legs and started wiggling your legs for you. You know, and you're just lying there while they're moving your legs, moving your arms, and hoping you'll build some muscles. You are learning nothing, using nothing. Your free will is not activated. Your self-determination is not activated. Your strength is not being engaged. You are not progressing in a linear way, nor are you progressing in a spherical way. There's just nothing happening except that your body benefits from the increased circulation, you could say. You know, it's a little bit
what
of
was that thing?
Oh, aerobic. Oh, those little belts that the ladies are going, and they wiggle the belts, and you're supposed to lose weight.
Yeah.
Because, you know, girls are too delicate to actually do any exercise. Those were the days.
Yeah.
1950s, I think.
Something like that.
So to me, making use of the life that I have is really important. The life and body that I have is really important. And my husband over there and I have taken a lot of flack from a lot of family members for not doing anything normal. We just don't do anything normal. For instance, here we retired and went to Ecuador. And they are all just flummoxed. What the heck did you do that for? Where even is Ecuador? Are there headhunters? Are they going to shrink our heads? We had a, I think it was your dad who asked, no, your brother, your college educated brother asked if they had indoor plumbing in Ecuador. Yeah. Indoor bathrooms? Are there indoor bathrooms? The things that
I get
we do.
It. Xenophobia or something, or I don't know, just lack of. It's just the outside.
Lack of
know.
Knowledge.
Yeah.
What did I know about Ecuador either before I started looking into it? It's simply you're familiar with your sphere. And this is the whole point consciousness-wise that we're talking about. Excuse me.
It's okay.
You are familiar with your body, your usual body sensations, your usual body state of strength, your usual emotional range. Some people only have like two emotions they ever use. I know a lot of men who have two emotions, neutral and angry.
Love and tenderness. That's it for us, for men, right? It's only just love and tenderness.
for some people. And for other people, it's different other emotions. For some people, it's sorrow or depression. Those are the two choices.
Yeah.
You have a lot of different emotional states that you are used to. Not a lot. So maybe a small amount, or it may be a large amount of emotional states that you're used to, and the same thing with mental states. Knowledge that you've had, do you continue expanding and learning all the time, or do you pretty much stick with what you learned when you graduated from high school, and that's enough to get you through?
A lot of people do. They had this study that came out where doctors were being told that their whatever the research was, new stuff was found out, red meat was supposed to be good for you. And then they're like, in moderation, you mm-hmm. know, things like that. Mm-hmm. But with specific, whatever their techniques were. And they were like, oh, okay, that's wrong. I got to teach it a different way now. And then they almost all went back to the way they were taught in medical school. Because the brain can't, you know, once they've accepted something and 20 years have passed, it's just too hard to be like, that's wrong.
Yeah.
When they knew it was correct for so long.
Yeah. That's a really good example.
Thanks.
Because usually, oh, are we still filming?
Yeah, we're going. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It is a pretty good example because it's kind of this well-known phenomenon, and I can't think of any of the really awesome quotes that are out there, people who describe this phenomenon, scientists. Einstein had a really good quote about it. But when a new scientific discovery is made, all the other scientists want to completely debunk it. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Because it goes against like what their world is.
What their world is. Stupidest thing I've ever heard. Stupidest thing. And then one day there are enough of them that they go, well, that's self-evident.
Yeah.
I am terribly, terribly paraphrasing what that really great quote was.
Yeah. No, I could see that happening. I mean, it's just too hard on the body to go. Let me readjust. It's easier to be like, no, you're a weirdo.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The body and mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm fortunate that I married someone who is pretty equally dedicated to constantly expanding, always learning new things. We are always looking everything up and learning about different things and going places and experiencing them. And it's because that's how you make use of your life.
Yeah. Do you think spatiality will have a similar effect on changing your consciousness, just being in a new place?
Yes. It's more than just coming out of your comfort zone. Yes. There's a reason why swamis and gurus and everybody go into caves and onto mountaintops. There's a reason why people have different experiences in the Himalayas and so forth than they do on the streets of, you know, Washington, D.C. or something.
It has to
do with a whole lot of characteristics. But one is gravity. There's more gravitational pull when you're down. Well, I'm saying down here, but here we are. What are we? 5,000 feet up in the Andes, I guess, right here. At sea level, there's a stronger gravitational pull than there is on the top of a mountain. It's, you know, not a huge difference.
So you
but
weigh like 2 less pounds at the equator or something like that, or 2 more?
Where we almost are. Like, we're just a little bit south of the equator, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So where you are can make a big difference. If you're surrounded by a lot of motion, a lot of noise. Let's say there's construction going on next to the building that you're in. You're just going to kind of go nuts after a while.
Yeah.
Some people might get stress headaches. Some people might just go, shut up, let me out of here. You know, different people will have different reactions. Whereas if you go to a mountain somewhere, or you go to Vilcabamba, Ecuador, or wherever it is that you might go, and you hear only bird song. I find that the songs and the actions of birds affect our electromagnetic fields in a really harmonious way. People tend to be barefoot, Exhibit A, in a place like this because why not? And so that grounds out static electricity that's in your physical form. Grounds out static. Like if I touched you, you wouldn't get a shock. Whereas on a rug in the house, we might. Yeah. Get a shock if I touched you.
Oh, wow. Damn, okay.
So, and the fact that the grass is damp, we've got the influence of water, which sort of draws that out, refreshes the feet, and so forth.
Yeah.
So the presence of the elements.
It's all right.
Earth, air, fire, water, metal, those elements, they are the elements of which our physical forms are made. So if you go to a place where all those elements of which our physical forms are made are readily available in a harmonious way, the way that Earth and nature naturally puts them together, not a whole lot of man-made stuff interfering, you're going to feel way better. You're going to reflect. You're going to resonate
yeah.
with that harmony. And regarding, I mean, I feel like all we're doing is laying the foundation to get to answer your question.
Okay.
And this foundation is good and valuable. You know the example of if you have two guitars in one room, acoustic guitars, it might work for electric too, but an acoustic guitar against the wall, and you have another acoustic guitar in your hand, and you strum a specific chord on the guitar, the one leaning against the wall across the room will begin, the strings will vibrate with the same chord.
Oh, wow.
Not just any random vibration, but the same chord will vibrate on those strings.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like a bridge was formed through...
Resonance. I would call it resonance.
Okay.
Bioresonance is the term for therapeutic ways to bring a similar state of harmony and wellness to a person's physical form, or a dog or cats or goldfish, you know, physical form of something, by if you resonate with a certain emotion. Okay, let's say you started having a fight with your partner. Your dog is likely to register a similar emotion and go, this isn't good, stop, that kind of a thing. If you were to sit down and start crying, let's say you were both to sit down and start crying, your dog would probably be going,
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is...
Yeah, my dog gets weirded out when my partner watches a bunch of scary movies.
Yeah.
She gets weird.
Yeah, like or sometimes we watch things about, you know, animals in Africa or something, and if, you know, a lion is eating a zebra, my dog and my cat do not like it.
Yeah, it's funny.
So all of this is a form of resonance. Bioresonance is when you feel it affecting yourself.
Okay.
Which takes us, please don't forget your question, audience member, thank you. If I want to help a person shift their consciousness, I don't just like walk in, chewing gum, cup of coffee in my hand, and slap myself down into a seat and start going, because I am not in any sort of state of consciousness for them to resonate with. I'm in a state of really normal, non-focused, non-balanced consciousness. You know, I was just watching, I don't know what, cartoons or something on TV and drinking coffee and, you know, just come in and go, hey, let's talk about consciousness. Well, I'm not resonating anything that is going to assist them. So if I were going to want to assist somebody or teach somebody, first I have to be what I want to offer. And so... My husband certainly knows this. I have to tend myself really well. Before doing a class or a workshop, I can't watch movies where everybody's stabbing and killing themselves. I can't drink wine because wine affects the consciousness in a way that lowers it. It makes it heavy and immovable.
Wine specifically or booze?
Booze.
Okay.
No, wine is probably the least least offender, but I don't like other booze. Anyway, so I have to tend myself. I can't be around certain emotional states, certain things around me, even if they're on a TV. I can't eat a lot of sugar or something like that before I do a workshop or a retreat or something. I really have to refine myself and keep my consciousness within a certain range of balance, harmony, calmness, and love. And then I walk in as a kind of a pillar, you could say, an expanded pillar of balance, harmony, love, peace. And everyone in the room is going to start resonating with balance, harmony, love, and peace when I walk in before I say anything.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I've seen people in like the service industry where a waitress will be like super upset, like, I did that, yes, and they're just frantic, and then the manager's like just sits and looks at them and doesn't respond, and just goes, okay, and they get a little less angry, and then a little less angry, and then it's like, anyway, can you change this 20 for me? I need to make change.
Like, exactly.
Absolutely, there you go. And it's just like you've calmed them down with your wavelength.
Exactly. And I would bet that everybody has their own experiences of doing that in both ways. Have there been times when everybody was fine, or you went to a party or something and you just had a little minor car accident on the way, a fender bender or something, and you walk in and you go, and next thing you know, everybody at the party is like, too.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing shifts.
Yeah. What was that question you had before? Yeah, do you remember it?
You asked such a good question. The question in a nutshell was, if you have just a small range of emotions, like person A over here tends to go to jealousy, paranoia, and anger, let's say. Here's this guy. And then this person over here tends to happiness and depression.
Yeah.
And this person over here tends to go to neutral anger and mild happiness. You know, it's like people tend to have two or three emotions that they use the most.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might have a wider range, and they have maybe four. Maybe they go really to joy. They have access to ecstasy emotionally, and they have access to really feeling sorrow, feeling sympathy and compassion. A range of emotions, and they are able to feel anger without letting it overtake them. They allow it to, they feel it, and then it flows through. So maybe they have a range of six emotions.
Right.
So here is what it does, and I can only give the most rudimentary explanation of this. I'm not even going to try because I will start giving you accidentally false information.
Okay.
But the basic idea is that neurological connections are made like little roads being paved, little flagstones being laid down, so that every time you give me that look that you always give me when I leave the towels on the bathroom floor, not you personally,
but
I leave the towels on the floor, you give me that look, I instantly go to sorrow and guilt and anguish. Oh, I left the towels again. Oh, now he's going to leave me. Something like that. And then the next day, you know, I leave a cereal on the counter and he gives me the look and I go to, oh, sorrow, anguish, and guilt. Oh, I'm so bad. Now he's going to leave me. And then I take a vacation day. Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, this person just feels the same emotions about everything that happens to them.
Yeah.
Because this is their range of emotions.
That's all they have to choose from.
That's all they have to choose from. And so somebody who has a greater range of emotions, they've got a lot more to pick from.
Well, or like visual artists. If it's me, I'm like, that's red. And a visual artist's like, no, that's magenta or a deep orange. Or they have like 50 ways to describe different types of red.
Oh, so
where
true.
I'm just like, it's red.
Oh, so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but there are actual neural pathways that are laid down when you do this. And so if you want to change your behavior, the first thing that you have to do is pretend you're changing your behavior. As we talked about earlier, pretend that you like or really love somebody that was getting on your nerves so badly that you've got to do something to deal with it. So you pretend you like them or you pretend you love them until after a while you do.
So you have to. So if there's a path in the woods and that's clearly the path and you're like, I need to make a new path.
Right.
The first one is going to knock branches out of the way. And the second one is knock a few less branches out of the way and chomp some like grass.
Yeah.
And by the thousandth time, there's a full path over there.
You create a new neural pathway. Okay. There are several types of, is it okay if I mention different forms of therapies that people use for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
One is colloquially known as tapping. Emotional freedom technique is another name for it. Somebody put the pieces together where you say certain things and tap on certain parts of the face, the shoulders, and the top of the head.
What?
You've used that? You've heard of it. Emotional freedom technique is a version of that that works. There's another one called VAX, which is visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. VAKS, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and something.
How do those work?
You tap different parts of your body while speaking. There are different ways that you can do it. If you tap certain ones, you want to say the thing that is the problem. I'm the worst person on earth. I'm so guilty. He'll leave me. No, there are more specific locations.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to teach this because I've practiced it several times and like it, but I don't know it enough.
Okay.
But you tap certain points on the brain. A person could look up tapping or emotional freedom technique to learn more about it. And it actually will change. You say, yes, I am a terrible person. I think that I'm guilty and he is going to leave me. You know, this little example we're using.
Yeah.
And you say that. And you tap all these things, and it clears it out, and you say, but in spite of that, and then you tap a different set of points, I am a good person and I love myself and something or other, whatever you're saying, the opposite. And you are rewiring your brain. There is another method called EMDR, where you move your eyes and you you move your eyes in certain ways, and you discuss certain memories and you word those memories in a certain way about your life, and it helps retrain your brain. The neural pathways will create new neural pathways and deactivate the old ones, so that every time, you know, somebody touches your pinky, you don't go into panic because when you were three, somebody stepped on your pinky or whatever it is, you know.
You know, Scientology talks something about that. Yeah, I'm not a Scientologist, but I've been there just to watch it. But they hate therapy because they say that kind of replaces what they do. But they go like, if you're upset every time you see a baseball game, you got to trace it back until some bullied you while you were playing catch with a baseball mitt. And once you can see it, you can like figure out how to challenge it or something.
There are a bunch of different. There are some other ones that right now the name's not coming to mind, but there are many different techniques for rewiring the way the nerves take your consciousness when certain things happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a great question. We are not stuck in the traumatic patterns that we've had. I know somebody who is stuck in traumatic patterns. She's had a lot of traumas, and she has tried each of these techniques just like enough, like three or four times to say, it doesn't work. Well, nothing works after three or four times.
Yeah.
So that is part of her syndrome, is like, nothing works. And so she makes sure she doesn't do them long enough for it to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
If she did it any longer, she knows it would work. So she stops it quick and says, it doesn't work. So that's...
No, I mean, in my industry too, you've had people, myself included for sure, was like looking for a reason why it's not my fault. So if I actually have to do 50 times of something, it's way harder than just trying it once. Yeah, and saying, that wasn't working. I don't need to do 49 more times.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and which is part of the syndrome that you're trying to get over.
The give-upping. Yeah, or whatever.
The give-upping or the I'm a loser, oh no. And, you know, you got to prove that you're still a loser by making sure that nothing works.
Yeah.
Whatever you
think. Yeah, my friend told me that he showed me this path of success he had. A guy I know, like a higher-up stand-up comedian.
Showed you a what?
A path to success, how he did it.
Path to success, yeah.
And for, I mean, 2 years, I was like... yeah, sure, you can do that because you're bigger. You have access to these big things. And so I told myself, like, you are looking for reasons why this isn't going to work instead of just following the advice of one of the all-time greats of what in your industry. And then at some point, I'm like, what an asshole I've been. Like, let me try. And I did, and it changed my life. It was completely like, you know, yeah, I didn't have access to all the things, but I could still go forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good revelation. Boy, because to realize that and get out of it, you know, you feel like you're, you know, a complete goon when you realize it. But on the other hand, you're miles ahead of almost everybody else who can't see their own. It's just too painful to see your own blind spots.
Yeah.
And so they won't look. They go, no, I don't have any blind spots. It's just that everybody else is wrong.
Yeah. So in addition to kind of keeping on a wavelength without staying off booze or staying kind of like in a loving way or something like that to get
that's
on their way.
That's just my thing for what I do. It doesn't mean everybody has to do exactly what I do.
What other methods do you use to like to get them to shift their pathways or to shift their, I guess, mental consciousness to physical? Yeah.
This is such a multi-layered thing. I mean, I teach 2-year programs, teach 1-year programs. It's really hard to give you the best of what I have in one interview, but I will sure give you what I can here before the sun goes altogether down.
Kills us,
I'm so glad we got this.
It's
view
so
on.
Cool, right?
It's so cool. You guys
most
are so
people are
lucky.
Just in front of like a wall when they do these.
Yeah, this is better than a wall.
If we get real lucky, there'll be a hummingbird coming by, but it's probably late in the afternoon for them. They swoop by here. They came right out through there where we were yesterday, right through that door, and then right out through there.
Or how about a parrot? There are some.
Yeah, I haven't seen
them. And there are lorikeets here. Yeah. Lorikeets are these things, a version of parakeets that are more common in this area. Yeah. They're kind of like dark colored.
Can we, let me try to think.
You want to hear some. Yeah. You want to get down to the nitty gritty.
Yeah. Kind of what is this genre? I don't know what you want to call it. Like, you know, what does this involve generally?
Oh, what does it involve? Okay.
I
trying to go for a short answer.
Yeah, it's hard.
Okay. I would say it first starts with awareness of the anatomy of consciousness as it overlaps the physical form. We're not just a random slab of meat, you know, that thinks things. There are circulatory pathways of consciousness, of life force, you could say, the same as there are circulatory pathways of blood and nervous impulses and lymphatic fluid throughout the body. I started learning about this when I was in my early 20s. I'm 65 now. I started when my consciousness search when I was 18.
18. What, 18. What made you start thinking? This is actually one of my questions. Is like, what was your introduction to all this?
How the heck did I get started, or why?
Yeah. What's your origin story?
So much unhappiness and abuse in my childhood. So very much. I had to do something to repair my broken psyche. Broken is a little exaggerated, but not by much.
Yeah.
It was pretty unhappy. So I needed to learn some things to make myself happy, because I recognized that I was not going to be happy unless I caused myself to be happy. I remember when I was about 8 years old, I was hopscotching on the sidewalk. You know that game where you draw with chalk and skip around? I was hopscotching up and down my sidewalk, trying to decide if I wanted to become a cynical person and just sink down into anger and sorrow, which would be so easy, or if I wanted to do the hard work and make myself happy. And I remember I was almost aware, I was kind of aware from the outside, like, gosh, probably anybody looking at me would just notice me skipping up and down in my little dress on the hopscotch thing on the sidewalk. And here I am thinking about, I was sort of self-aware even at that young age, saying, you know, it's really hard to be happy, but I'm going to figure out how. And so that was a pivotal moment at the age of eight.
Eight. And you're like, I'm going to figure this out.
I said, I'm not going to give in to cynicism and sorrow. Those were the two things that I was deciding between, cynicism, sorrow, or happiness. And I hopscotched for God knows how long, and I finally decided I would go for happy, even though it was hard.
It's almost a leap of, it's almost like religious. It's almost a leap of faith where it's like, that's there. I don't have it in me right now, but it's there, and I'm going to get it.
But I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I suppose it set the stage for a spiritual thing. I did not trust religion. I'm trying to think how much I want to say. The church that my family had gone to was a source of a lot of my problems.
Yeah, okay.
But
you honestly don't have to specify which one. There's 50 different ones that everyone can relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just decided I would find my way. And then when I was around 17 or 18, I started thinking about how I was going to go about making myself happy. And I started looking a little bit religious, and I kind of went, ick, 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 you know, and and it didn't happen. And then I was introduced to meditation. There was one of the gurus that came over from India. There were a bunch that were coming over in that approximate late 60s.
Late 60s, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I learned about meditation, which gave me a way to quiet the thoughts. And so this is clue number one for anybody who wants to shift their consciousness. You cannot continue thinking what you think every day in loops and loops and loops and loops and expect to expand beyond it.
Yeah.
First, you have to stop the loops of whatever it is. Anybody might be, you might have 12 or 100 or 20 or whatever different loops that you go through. But loops are loops, and you will not move beyond them unless you stop the loops first.
They say people who take the same route to work every day are more susceptible to, what's the disease you get?
Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
To Alzheimer's.
And if you switch your routes, just go down different streets, you're way less susceptible to Alzheimer's.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Because you're not the groove that you were talking about. You're causing more grooves for your consciousness to go through.
Switching countries, going to the country, being where it's quiet, right. Where it's like, you know, you can get off your email.
Right.
You know.
Shifting so that you've got more grooves to choose from, or more loops to choose from, or bigger loops. So meditation, I think there is no way around it. And if a person objects to meditation because it seems like it comes from a foreign country and you're not from a country that has meditation in its history, I beg to differ. Just about any country and just about any spiritual tradition or cultural tradition has something where you go and be quiet someplace.
Yeah. We time out.
Time like, out in the corner to think about what you've
earlier
done.
Stage.
Yeah. So,
think about what you've done. Be mindful and think about what you've done.
Or if you threw spitballs in class, you go sit in the corner. Yeah. Or you go to the principal's office and you sit there and think about what, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There are many traditions of silencing your mind so you can do something different, right? That's why the kid goes in the corner. That's why you go to the wait outside the principal's office for, you know, 3 hours before you actually go in to be quiet so that you can do something different.
That's great. Screaming at us. How did it get such a wonky idea behind it? Like the idea when I grew up in a mainstream regular and you hear meditation, you're like, all right, weirdo. Like that was given to me. I didn't make that decision on my own to think of it that way.
That meditation was weirdo. Yeah. Somebody told you that
where
meditation
did it
was
start
weird.
Being like ostracized.
I would say that comes from the 1930s when the very first guru from India with long hair came from India to the United States. 1930s. His name was Yogananda, and which means the joy of union with God.
Get it out of here.
Weirdo, get out of here. Joy of union with God. Who wants that? Ananda means bliss, and yoga is union with your soul, with God, union. So.
Okay. How much time is, what time is it?
Almost seven.
Okay. Yeah. We're not going to miss dinner.
I'm fine. So Yogananda came over and he, for some reason, felt that it was his time. I think there was some beautiful story. He has a book called Autobiography of a Yogi.
Okay.
If anybody wants to learn about.
I'll put a link to that at the bottom of the thing.
It's an awesome book. I love it. It's just fascinating. It's true and it's fascinating. And it explains why did this guy come from India to a country that's the complete opposite of his country to teach people who had never heard of anything that he was talking about. And he had decided beforehand that he would teach all of his yogic teachings in Christian language because he felt that the majority of the United States were practicing Christians in the 1930s, and I don't know. He may have been right. I'm not.
What do you think? You think it was? You can't put your mind in his mind, but like it was something like, oh, there's this like desire for it. Like none of them have it yet, so I can go sell it to everybody, but give it to everybody.
It was very beautiful, and I love this book, and I've read it about three times, but it was a long time ago. The last time I don't recall. I think. His teacher maybe sent him saying, the word from on high, the word I got from God in meditation, something like that, is that somebody needs to go help these people. And it's time for someone to do it, and so you're the one.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so go. There's the bird up in that tree. It's sitting on that branch.
Oh, yeah.
I can finally see it. So Yogananda came and he started, I think it was a Theosophical Society, anyway, and he taught, and that was when meditation first came, and he wore clothes from India, and people who followed him, if they became advanced practitioners in yoga and meditation, they would wear unusual things, and so people said, oh, they're weirdos, they follow this guy who has long hair from another country, that sort of thing. And then in the 1960s, for some reason, another influx of yogis, such as Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and just a bunch of others came over. There's whole bunches of them that came over in the 60s and 70s. And some of them were not strong enough to maintain their path, and they succumbed to, you know, people wanting to give them money, support them, you know, buy them houses, give them cars, and women throwing themselves at them. And they had been, you know, in ashrams all their life, you know, and they couldn't resist. And so some of them got bad reputations because it was they just couldn't quite hold their center.
Well, that's what
in this alternate.
Yeah, it's a Buddhist that he sat under the tree, and he's like, they gave him like temptation after temptation, and he was like, no. But like, he was 1 inch away from saying yes, right. And then there's no Buddha.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. It's tough. And so some made it and some didn't. So this is what meditation is. And no.
No, this is not what meditation is. This is why I got a hokey
image of meditation.
Because they have long hair and the robes. That
and they make you sit around and, you know, stick your legs in the air and do yogic things, you know.
Easy Rider. Remember, they're like, what are you doing with long hair? And they like, beat the shit out of them because they're like, what's with your long hair, hippie?
Yeah,
can't imagine a yogi with like hair down to there with white on white.
Yeah, and wearing these little weird robe things that are all folded around and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking like he's wearing a dress or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Okay.
So this was the origin. However, I'm not talking about adopting an Indian lifestyle or nothing. Meditation is, at its simplest, it's where you sit quietly in your comfiest chair. You be really normal.
Yeah.
And just close your eyes and listen to yourself breathe really simply. Just your breath goes up and your breath goes down. And you just feel the breath go up and down. And after a while, hopefully, your normal loops of thoughts and awareness will stop. And if they don't stop, you can move beyond a simple breath up and down to using a mantra. You don't have to have a word in Sanskrit that an Indian guy whispered in your ear in secret. It doesn't have to be anything like that. You can just say, I like the word peace. Or I like the phrase, I am free. Or I like the phrase, anything else. Ever watch Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Serenity, now!
Oh, yeah.
That was hilarious. Don't do that one.
So you just keep saying that over and over again?
If you find that just sitting and listening to your breath is impossible and you're feeling itchy and antsy and want to wiggle and you want to, you know, thinking about what to make for dinner or something, then yeah, you better call in a mantra because you're not getting very far.
Right.
Your loops just won't go away no matter how hard you
try. It's hard. Shit pours into your brain. As soon as you empty it, it's just like...
As soon as you empty it, it's like...
It fills up.
Remember in high school? You know, it's like, wait a minute. I do not need to be doing this right now.
Like, breathe in, breathe out. Fuck. Where would I go?
Serenity now.
Yeah.
So, the main thing is just, you know, pick something that is beneficial to you and is different from what you normally do that will stop the loops. We're still like in a first grade conversation about this. We're still really foundational. I'll see if I can speed up.
Yeah, okay, please.
A little bit. But meditation being a way to stop the loops in your mind. There are other forms of meditation. A lot of people, particularly in this year at this time, have a lot of anxiety and stress issues. And they have a lot of anger towards people whom they dearly loved. What was it, 10 months ago?
Yeah.
People they dearly love now are their mortal enemies because one wears a mask this way and the other wears a mask that way. Something like that completely.
Yeah.
I got to hand it to whoever's out there trying to divide people against one another. They've done a good job.
I think there's actually a separate thing where it's like the media and algorithms that go on like have incentive to get you upset because that'll make you log on more.
There is all kinds of stuff like that. It also has to do with buying more things. Yeah. It just has to do with craziness that we don't actually care about and that are not particularly good for us. But that's a different subject.
Yeah.
So if that is somebody's issue, they could do another form of meditation, which is here's your heart over here, okay, on your left side of your chest. If you just – there's an energy center in line with the spinal column that is on a level with your heart. And so you could just breathe into that portion, or this, it doesn't matter, the actual heart, or this energy center that's related to the heart. Breathe in and breathe out. And you might just use the word love, forgiveness, compassion, joy. Love, forgiveness, compassion, joy.
I like that. Yeah.
You're writing that down.
I can't always think of titles for these podcasts.
Pardon me.
It's okay.
And so that will cause the heart center, that will cause love to be stimulated. There is another thing that can be done Because to me, if you get love flowing into you, instead of your thoughts, if you get the thoughts quieted and you get love flowing, love is kind of the universal lubricant that allows all good things to start working and flowing when they didn't before. So another way to get love flowing is to place your hand on your heart and put a smile on your lips. When you put a smile on your lips, it stimulates the flow of endorphins. Yeah. So there's a physical response. You don't have to be happy. You don't have to imagine you're happy. You just have to shape your lips. Okay? You just have to shape your lips like a smile. You don't even have to place your hand on your heart. Just breathe. And maybe you're thinking something like love, forgiveness, compassion, joy, or whatever words you like. Breathing in and out, that causes the flow of endorphins, which make you feel fuzzy, warm, and kind of happy. May take a few minutes, depending on where you're coming from. You may be like a bunch of wild horses that escaped their corral, and it's going to take a few minutes to get them into the corral. You know what I mean? To herd the wild horses into the corral where you're just like this. Another thing you can do is called the Ujjayi breath in yoga. I call it the Darth Vader breath. Personally,
yeah.
If you breathe in the back of your throat, let's see if I can do it because I was already coughing from doing the Serenity Now thing. But
can you walk over there to get that thing on, the light on, the motion sensor
to trigger the motion sensor? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
Okay. I don't. We'll see how well I can do it because, anyway, it's like this approximately. Here we go. I'm kind of getting to
class does this, and it makes this noise.
Yeah. I need to go a little bit deeper, but it's hard to quite get there instantly. But you stop just short of a snore. For most people, it's a pretty good idea to blow your nose before any kind of practice like this, just so you're not like, you know. Yeah. So anyway, what that does is it vibrates the upper palate of the mouth. In the back of the throat, the back of the mouth. When the upper palate vibrates, it bumps against the pineal gland, which is right directly above it. The pineal gland is a seat of consciousness. So if you do that breath and vibrate the upper palate, which then vibrates the pineal gland, you are stimulating your consciousness to kind of burst like a little fountain upward. So hand on heart. Any sort of mantra, tranquility, bliss, you know, any combination of words you might want to say. Smile on your lips. The Darth Vader breath or the Ujjayi breath. And shortly, you've got a little bit of activation, like a bit of a fountain up this way. Which brings us to the fact that our structure does not end above our head or where our skin ends. We have energy fields, energy layers that go above, and the ones that have to do with higher consciousness are organized above the crown of the head. So it's not that good stuff is actually north of us. It's not that, you know, you're trying to reach up to good things that are only north of you. But it's kind of like if somebody's heart has stopped because they got electrocuted or something, you beat on their heart here because that's where the heart's located, okay?
Yeah.
You don't beat on their knee to get their heart going. You beat on the heart to get it going. And so same way, if you want your consciousness to be uplifted, you have to work with your upper chakras, with the energy centers that extend down into the earth through the midline of the body, up through the brain, the pineal and the pituitary gland, the thalamus, the parts of the brain. Then it goes up from the crown of the head into the upper consciousness, the upper chakras. You have to work with those because those are the ones, like if your heart stops, you beat on your heart. If your consciousness is not particularly expanded and you're stuck in loops and you can't seem to get your life moving, you need to work with the parts of energy that are above your head.
Yeah. Okay.
So that makes sense. There are other places, the back of the occiput, the back of the head. That's a energy center that has to do with life purpose, soul purpose. And for most people, it's way stuck and inward. It needs to be allowed to expand outward.
So physically, just kind of like stretching muscles will allow you to have more range of motion.
Yes.
Sort of same thing.
Yes.
Is this scientifically researched or is this more passed down? You know what I mean?
Both.
Is it more advanced now than it was when Yogi Nanda came?
I would not say more advanced. I would say different people translate it different ways over the years. There are teachers in most traditions that will teach variations on this, on exercises, meditations, stretches, practices, substances that you could eat or drink, essential oils that affect your consciousness different ways that cause these various centers that are currently not activated. The people in India who wear a bindi on their forehead, the little red dot,
has
come to just indicate what caste they're from, what their ancestral lineage of their physical body has been. Long ago, it indicated somebody whose inner eye, the bindu, which is an energy center in the back of the head. If you go straight in through here and down from here, it's
one spot.
Very hard to describe.
X meets Y.
Yes. Right. Where X meets Y, like a Etch-a-Sketch.
Uh-huh.
When the bindu is activated, you can go to higher consciousness. A really poor idea to activate that in someone who has done no personal work on themselves, because you probably don't want them manifesting lower, cruddy states of being.
Yeah.
So it is generally not dealt with, except in more advanced people who have really been working with balancing and harmonizing their emotions, quieting their mind, learning, expanding, working with the consciousness, understanding the anatomy of consciousness, and getting some grasp of what is currently called a soul, the part of us that is made of light and contains the consciousness that can be seen departing at death, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. You can see it departing at death. This is like,
well, some
videos sometimes where you see like a little bit of a wave. You ever seen those?
I know they're fake videos.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm not aware of any real videos, but okay. I know of fake videos. When my mom died, I was acutely aware of it. But anyway,
I got a call from, I was in Israel. I was in a seminary. Didn't take. But I was in a seminary, and I got a call. Somebody just had a message, because it was just payphones back then. And it was, hey, Ari, your mom called. And I was like, oh, my grandfather's dead. And he wasn't in hospice or anything. It was just like, ah, fuck. All right, I got to call home. But I don't know how I knew it.
Really good example. Here you are talking about some of Rupert Sheldrake's work. Are you aware of Rupert Sheldrake?
Uh-huh.
Okay, he's a... researcher, British researcher. We don't have enough time to go into it, but Rupert Sheldrake calls that the morphic field. You, your family, your pets, and your houseplants, anything living, are connected. And so your grandfather dies, your morphic field is aware of it. Probably you didn't tune into it, though, till somebody said your mom called and you said, oh, I get it, because my grandfather died. That's why. You don't know how you knew it. Or
it's your field.
Yeah, or maybe the phone rang and you knew it was your mom. Or, I mean, right. It didn't happen to you that time, but you know how that happens. Uh-huh. You just know who's on the phone. You know what they're going to say. That sort of thing. There are several people. What are their names? Who have written books. Oh, Christopher Bird is one. The Secret Life of Plants. Who have written about the connection between plants and their people. You put electrodes on plants, electrodes on people. The person goes away, does stuff. The plant registers everything that the person is doing. You put electrodes on a plant and on a person, and the person starts picturing themselves going over and snipping the leaves off the plant, and the plant the graph of the plant goes wild.
Right,
like,
really?
What are you doing? Oh. Things like that.
Wow, interesting.
So morphic field, this is expanded consciousness. Harold, what is the guy's name who wrote the wonderful new book? If you just look up The Consciousness of Plants, The Secret Life of Plants, Secret Life of Trees, there are a lot of people who have written books on this general topic.
You've seen, I've talked about this before, but how if trees here are suffering, trees like a mile away can like sort of send them nutrients.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is more of the new research. So in this regard, there is new research. The anatomy of consciousness is not new, though it's translated differently. I believe the Sufis have courses that they can teach regarding anatomy of consciousness as well.
Yeah.
But the consciousness of plants and their relation to people, the morphic fields, Harold Buehner, B-E-U-H-N-E-R, something like that,
okay.
Is one of the guys who's got
so
really good
So in some ways
books.
It's like moving forward, in other ways it's like, you know what they said, like old peoples that have been wiped out, but they were way more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they didn't have electricity, but they had other stuff that we're
exactly.
slowly getting to now.
Exactly.
It was already there.
Exactly.
So what? Okay.
Yeah. And I feel that there's a tremendous amount of hubris in our society about human greatness, and that we assume that we are the pinnacle and that everybody was always a caveman
yeah.
and that they moved up to us and we are the greatest thing there ever was. And I completely, vehemently disagree. I believe that there are other civilizations that had troubles and went down, and we were kind of thrown back to Stone Age times mostly. This is why every continent has pyramids all over it. You know, every continent
yeah.
has...
Yeah, but they're like Mexican pyramids? What?
Yes.
What is that?
China has pyramids.
Yeah.
Ukraine has pyramids. I mean, everyone has pyramids.
Yeah.
And so the U.S. has pyramids. I'm trying to remember where they are. Somewhere in the Midwest... but
Mojave.
They're, you know, they're mostly covered over by
yeah.
years of sand drifting or whatever
yeah.
the heck it is. So I believe that before that there were other civilizations that came and went, and we think we're the greatest thing, and I don't think we know what we're talking about.
Maybe you're right. I mean, my buddy says that I was telling him what I told you about those people I met in the Amazon. They were like, try this.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I'll dance around it a little bit, but like,
mm-hmm.
But he was like, oh, yeah, he has a theory that they were way advanced in the Amazon and the whole jungle was actually cultivated. And then when they were wiped out by disease or whatever, the cultivated plants that helped with this or that just started growing wild. That became the jungle. It overgrew everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah, that was like graft and, you know, and they created all these things.
Very likely to be the case. They have found... with flyovers using the current
yeah.
sonar technology and
mm-hmm.
stuff, they've found foundations of buildings and civilizations and cities inside the jungle.
Deep in. Completely covered. Like some of those anchors in Angkor Wat, like nearby there, where they're like, they're like, there's more here. Let's do the flyover and find
Angkor
them.
Angkor Wat's a big, big whopping deal, yeah.
Yeah.
And those, like those, the Dogon tribe in Africa that talks about their ancestors, they just casually talk about, yeah, their ancestors who gave them all the star maps, and that's why they know where all
Damn,
the stars
right.
are, all the...
Yeah.
All those people, you know, they say, oh, yeah, well, it came from our ancestors. And then we come in and say, no, we're just
we're
now. And they go, what? You know, yeah.
yeah.
Our heads are kind of, we have a severe case of rectal cranial inversion.
I heard a professor in college, my first year of college, and he said, what separates us from the animals, completely from the animals? And everyone made their guesses, like the thumb. Like, no, there's some species with thumb. Not most, but, you know, some. Some horses rape, you know, there's like this like traits of ours in everything, but what's the only one is that we will learn from our ancestors. And now I'm guessing we're also refused to learn from our ancestors.
Yeah, we have the option of learning from our ancestors. How about that?
Yeah,
yeah, we can refuse.
Yeah, interesting. God, there's so much shit here.
And we have only barely begun.
Yeah.
So
so like, okay, if this was a good like jump off or whatever, how do people like learn more about this in general? Like, how would they get?
Well, if anyone is seriously interested, I can give my website.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
theschoolofpeace.com.
Schoolofpeace.com.
Theschoolofpeace.com is my school. Right now, we are trying desperately without enough adequate help to get the thing finished and to upload all my classes and that kind of a thing so that people can do that. But they can...
guided classes?
Hopefully before too long. Classes in all these types of consciousness, which will... The classes will be clearly labeled if you want to do this, if you want to do that. Also, most of my classes come because of a request. So if somebody says, I heard this podcast and now I want to see, can you teach me this specific thing? Yeah. Well, if I can, if it's something that I can do, then I would certainly, this is what I do. I would form a class based on this one person's request and say, anybody else want to join it? And if nobody else does, it would be something that I would do individually for that person. If other people want to join, it would become a workshop, a class or whatever at this point on Zoom.
And if it's somebody said, can you help me, I don't know, lift 500 pounds, you'd be like, oh, that's not my expert. I don't know how to do that. Or
yes.
Something mentally where you're like, I actually don't know. Let me see if I can find someone for you. Or
I have no problem saying I don't know something. I have no interest in being all things to all people.
I'll trust any mechanic who's like, I don't think you need to fix this right now. Or like, hey, right. I don't have the know-how to fix this.
Yes.
Like, then I'll do whatever you say I need to do because right. You're not just stealing my money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. No, I am the opposite of that. You know, people like to have sessions with me and I go, my goal is to put myself out of business, is to teach you how to do this stuff yourself so that you will then go and teach other people. I don't care. Just teach one person. Teach your friend. Teach your kid. Somebody. Teach somebody. You know.
You can do them on Zoom. That's like,
yeah, I do stuff on Zoom.
Yeah. Would you record them and put them up? Like
I do record them and put them up, unless they're personal. Personal things for groups, but
that's such a market for that.
Yeah, well, you know? This is a time when people. I feel like all these years, holy cow, 45 years, I've been studying and working with us, working with beings in other dimensions. I don't know that's a whole other. If you want to have more talks with me, I'm on Zoom, you know, if you want to do more podcasts. But I just work with a lot of different sources, you know, regular teachers here, all kinds of different things to do whatever I can and offer things to people. And I've been doing that for 45 years.
And you're learning more and more.
Probably 46 years, maybe 47 by now. I haven't counted up lately, but I continually learn. Because the more I work on myself and practice, because I do practice what I talk about, the more I do that, the more large and expanded I become, the more cup-like, you could say, I can receive more, I can hold more. One of the things that I really work with people on is the ability to hold higher frequency energies within themselves. Because if you and I were to do an advanced meditation right now that you had never done before, you would probably be so tired afterwards and you would want to sleep for 2 days.
Right.
And I'm not exaggerating.
Really?
Yes. If I guided you through bringing in higher energies into yourself, you would feel on top of the world. You would feel ecstatic, expanded. You go, wow. And then you would like sleep for a day.
Bonnie, this is, I mean, we talked about it and with my friend, but this is exactly what happens on mushrooms.
Yes.
Where you're mentally just completely drained.
You're done.
And the 5-6 hours on it is great. And then the next day it's like, I can't.
You can't count to three.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can't hold it. You don't have the container to hold it. You can have the memory of what you experienced, but you can't recall it. And this brings us to, I'm so glad you said that. This is the point of this whole conversation. And we covered so much ground.
Do it without the crutch.
It almost feels like part one of two
know,
or something like that.
Well, let's do another part, like over Zoom another time.
We could do that. It's important to build your energy system, which is, well, okay, I can say electromagnetic field. That makes more sense to people maybe. Build your electromagnetic field through the repetition that causes the neural pathways to exist, that you know how to hold this, that when you have an experience like this, you don't stand up and it's all gone and you're tired. You stand up and you still feel that way the next day. And you still feel that way the day after. And you feel strong and you can build on it. But it cannot happen instantly. It takes a lot of practice and consistency.
Yeah.
So first steps and first basic understandings of why might you want to commit to the time or whatever to do a certain practice, depending on what your goal is. Is your goal to become peaceful? Is your goal to become healthier? Is your goal to become more strong? Is your goal
to
become
yourself
or happier, like, yeah, or stand right. up for yourself, confidence, right. or lack of anxiety, or more empathic and compassionate, or...
And that's what you go work on.
Whatever your thing might be, yeah, you could develop some practices that would have to do with that. I think I just swallowed a gnat.
Yeah, they get in there.
Because this is gnat time of night.
Yeah.
I'd noticed the bugs are starting to come out.
Yeah. I love how it drops off.
Car driving along the mountainside.
Oh, yeah.
They have like goat trails up the mountains. We went way into a valley yesterday, yeah. way to visit a friend. It took half an hour to drive up her driveway. I mean, on goat trails.
The roads are so bad in some parts, and you're just like...
Teeny weeny pitted.
And then she, for 30 feet, you're like, oh, it's back to normal. And you're like...
No, there was nothing to normal. Yeah.
Get your hopes up.
It was this, she has this massive organic permaculture farm back there, and she grows coffee and all kinds of things. And she has to drive along a goat trail like that to get...
Yeah.
I'm calling them goat trails. Anyway, it takes practice and more practice and more practice to develop strength within the physical energy field. That's the yeah. electromagnetic field, the emotional energy field, the electromagnetic field, which deals with emotions, the pathways on which emotions travel in loops or in a more healthy manner, the mental energy field, and the spiritual energy field, which is spiritual energy field. It's not about religion. It's about your sense of belonging to the earth and to all of existence.
And there's, and maybe we should save this for when we do another time. So this is like an introduction to people. There's also the way you were like, I'm not putting booze in my body so I can be more in tune with this or whatever. There's also like plenty of other cleansing things you can do for your body to keep you. It's not just about like turning off the cell phone. You know?
Right. Yes. There are, let's see. Well, I can come up with a quick laundry list of things that lower the frequency, increase the density. And this is not to say that slow and dense frequencies are bad.
Yeah.
That's like saying, you know, blue is bad, whereas green is good. No.
Right.
Everything has its place. And as a consciousness, which is made of photons and electrons of light, you know, it's so hard to put this in a short yeah. period of time.
Decades of learning, so it's tough.
Yeah. As a being, we need to be anchored in a physical dense form with a slower vibration, or else we'd just be floating up back into spirit. Why have a body? Why even get born into a body unless you're going to be in the body and do body things?
Okay.
So I'm not saying don't ever have booze and don't ever watch a TV show and don't. I'm just saying that when I need to teach or when I need to do something, or if I'm going to work with a baby, or if I'm when I have some energy healing work to be done, something like that, I can't drink before it because any alcohol just slows my vibration, increases yeah. the density, and I can't lift my consciousness. I can't activate the higher chakras as well to be able to have the higher dimensional vision and the higher dimensional hearing, the sensitivity in my hands to be able to sense what's happening mm-hmm. in someone's physical or emotional or mental self.
It's just like time and place. Like I wouldn't do spaghetti right before I wouldn't eat spaghetti right before I work out. Right before I, like, do a bunch of cardio.
Yeah, probably a bad idea.
But then after a long hike, it might be really good to carb up.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. That's exactly right. For instance, every time I do a class, I have now given in and realized that this is simply the truth for me. I keep chocolate by my chair, and yeah. I have chocolate at the end. And it's so funny because two of my teachers mentioned that, you know, when you're going to do a class, you know, have some chocolate for afterwards. The theobromine does something beneficial to help replenish a person who has been expanding their consciousness. It's like carbs after a hike or carbs after a workout or protein, you know, here and there. Chocolate contains something that helps replenish when your consciousness is being expanded.
Yeah.
So beforehand, kind of keep the cell phones at a distance. Don't play harsh music. My God, music Music affects us so powerfully on every single level. Do not play harsh music before. If you're trying to achieve something expansive and real and true and beautiful, don't play music with words that are not life-giving or music that's discordant.
Uh-huh.
Play the music that's discordant when you want to dance and laugh and have fun. I'm not saying discordant music is bad. I'm saying choose the right tool for the job.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
So the right tool for the job. So before something like this, you play harmonious music, you watch a harmonious TV show, you don't watch the documentary about the lions eating the zebras, you watch the documentary about bunnies and flowers, or you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
You choose the right tool for the job and keep yourself in a place of centered where you become awareness, where you become aware of the patterns of harmony between everything.
Natural foods would help with that too.
Yeah, so much so much so. Yeah, I don't like to do red meat before like a workshop or something because my digestion just goes totally into that, and or like processed food that takes all your digestion and you've got like bloated stomach and you're like burping and things. That's and just practicality. Garlic is so strong that all my senses keep going back to garlic. So if I'm trying to sit and meditate and I'm trying to like achieve something and I'm like, oh God, my garlic breath is killing me. So just, it's really basic. It's really practical. It's not like, you know, a guru sitting here saying, no, you must not touch garlic. No, it's just practicalities.
Yeah,
you know?
Rest an almond on your forehead.
Yeah, if you're going to be like burping garlic when you're trying to learn how to meditate, you know, you're going to distract your own self.
Yeah.
So just don't.
Still to get lost in a yoga class when you're farting. The whole time.
True.
When you're conscious of it.
And like, yet, yoga causes that to happen. So what do you do? You know, what do? You just deal with it.
Yeah. Damn. What's the name of the, not church, what's the name of the
my school?
School, yeah.
The School of Peace.
The School,
is called the School of Peace. Currently, it's the old website that has a lot of old information on it.
Okay.
Just things that I'm not currently practicing.
Well, you'll update it.
Yeah. I have a ministry program that's advertised on it, which I'm not currently teaching anybody, but it's for people who cannot align with any religion, people who are unable to find any religion that they align with, but they would still enjoy doing weddings, doing, you know, baby welcoming ceremonies, doing funerals, and being allowed to go into hospitals to help someone who's dying, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I have been ordaining people for 10 years to be peace ministers.
Do you know the Church of... Fuck. Church
of Flying Hope? Spaghetti Monster?
No.
Universal Peace.
Universal Life Church.
Universal Life Church. Yeah.
They,
the back of the magazine
theory
guys.
Is anyone who... Their theory is anyone who wants to be ordained, that's the consciousness, God, whatever, telling you you should be ordained.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you're filling out this form in the back of the magazine is your qualification.
They have a real point there,
uh-huh.
And they have turned themselves into somewhat of a substantial organization, and they sell a lot of materials that can be used, and they have a really good point. However, I offer 2 years of training that trains you, what are the legalities in your state, how do you actually create a ceremony that's real, how do you create close the kitchen in 10 minutes. Okay. How do you create a deep emotional experience during this and that? How do you tend to a person who's grieving? And so anyway, what I'm trying to say is I'm not currently offering that program.
Okay. All right.
It is there. If there were a lot of demand, I probably would offer it again, but I'm just currently not in the United States.
So. Okay. But you offer a lot more and we can see what it's
heck of a lot more. Yes. And a lot of it is on the website. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Even though it's so dark, you probably can't see us.
That's cool. No, I think it'll look cool in the video, going from light into nothing.
Ooh, yeah. Watching the scenery.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's talk more about it, though, over dinner.
But,
let's talk more about it over dinner.
Yeah.
But thanks, man. This was really cool.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this is really interesting stuff.
I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
Okay, we better go. 10 minutes for dinner.
Okay.
I am lost in meditation. My reverie brings you back to me, for in my imagination, love has lingered on. ever gone.
All right, everybody, that is the podcast. That's the podcast. Did I fucking write down? What did I do with Bonnie? Schoolofpeace.com. That's what it is. The schoolofpeace.com. I didn't ask her. I would have gotten to it if we had more time, but it was cool to watch a sunset, like where it like starts light and then goes slowly dark. It was pretty fucking cool doing that. If you're watching on YouTube, youtube.com/RHFair. Talks about taking your shoes off and being connected with the ground. I was at a music festival and I was a shaman of the group. I knew one person in the group beforehand and I had met one other and everybody else. One, two, three, four, five, six, I don't know, seven or eight people, other people. They were, hey, Bandit, what's up, buddy? Your friend's out there. She's whining. Anyway, some people brought coke. My job was mushrooms. And I got, don't scratch. And I got a bunch of mushrooms, 2 pounds, and gave it to everybody. And one guy had never done mushrooms before. A few people had never done mushrooms. And he did mushrooms 4 straight days. One of my favorite fucking 4-day experiences watching this guy, Angus, do hella shrooms. And by day two, I think it was on day two, he took his shoes off and they're gone. I don't know. So we were watching music and he's like, oh, fuck the shoes. And he took his shoes off so he could stand on the grass so he could be connected with the ground. And he just stayed in this mindset, this great, fucking glorious, happy place. And I think a lot of it was, just like Bonnie said, I think a lot of it was being connected to the ground, physically connected to the soil. A lot of cows and shit there over the years, not when there's a music festival going on. And he was more than us. We all wear shoes. He didn't have anything blocking it. So if there's any sort of like anything to that physical touching, and I think I'm an animist, so I do think sometimes when you touch an old stone or the walls in Jerusalem, it takes you back to as long as this place had been there. So you touch Jerusalem's walls, I mean, you're touching walls that Jesus were. You're walking those streets. You're walking the same streets Jesus walked, and people way before Jesus. There's a connection there. I don't know. That's just what I don't know. I haven't really studied animism, but from what I have read, that's what I am. And Angus had a connection to the ground that we didn't have, probably from touching it to the earth. I don't know. The earth that gave us the mushrooms. Once we were in we were sitting there, and he was wearing a fucking. I was wearing a tie-dye top, and he was wearing a fucking top hat, like a stovetop top hat, striped with different colors. I was wearing fleece pants. He was wearing, not fleece pants. Yeah, fleece pants. Oh, he was wearing fleece pants. I was wearing like those elephant pants. We're sitting, watching. I think it was right before Lizzo, like a daytime band. Some lady comes up to us, just to me and Angus. There was 4 of the people in our group there. She just looks at me and she goes, hey. It was a hippie lady. And we're like, yeah. She goes, do you guys want mushroom balls? We're like, what? She goes, they're made with fig. Do you guys want some? You want to buy some? And we're like, yeah. And Angus was like, but I still have a lot of mushrooms. Like, we can use different ones. So she was like, okay. They were like, $5 each. Five. And I'm like, thanks a lot. And when I turn around, Angus already eaten his. Right. I mean, we already have. Whatever, though. What am I saying? What are we going to save it for? We're already at the festival. So in terms of what she says is having a physical connection to the ground, I think I saw that at that festival with Angus. So, interesting podcast. If we ever get a chance, maybe we'll do a part 2. We can get into some of the herbs and medicines and stuff. I don't really know what's good for you. You know, what helps get your what's it called when you can fight off a cold? Your something. This is the kind of shit you can tell me in that fucking Patreon podcast. Get your, you know, you take vitamin D to get your something up. Jesus Christ, Ari. You're a fucking public orator. Anyway, thank you very much, Bonnie Willow. Don't forget to check out School of Peace. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you to our sponsor, our lovely sponsor, for keeping this going, helping me pay my bills, and all the staff I have that are putting together these YouTube podcasts and editing for me and doing all this shit so I can concentrate on just being out there in the world and getting to meet people like Bonnie Willow. being able to do it on another fun podcast so I don't have to concentrate on fucking clerical work. So thank you to the sponsor, and thank you for all my patrons who also help, mostly patrons, help really pay for that. So, guys, until next week, I'm Ari Shaffir for Bonnie Willow. How and Why to Meditate. Over and out.
I see the sky and wonder why it's blue instead of red. I see a tree that's lost its leaves and wonder why it's dead. And the sun that keeps us warm and fills the day with light. Then I marvel at the stars that twinkle through the night. The mountain peaks that stand so high, they seem to disappear into the sky. And across the snow-capped mountain, I see the blue horizon, with streaks of white that linger there, behind the jets a-flying. Such miracles my eyes behold, all part of God's creation. There's so much beauty to be seen in moments of meditation. I speak to God while quiet and still. The questions in my mind of things that I don't understand, each mystery that I find the answers quickly there for my soul's salvation when I talk to God in moments of meditation. I ask God why someone like I should be so richly blessed, while some who speak His name so true are hungry and distressed. Then His voice is silent in my meditation with Him, which lets me know that some things must be known only to Him. There's none so great as God the Father, the King of all kings, the writer of each holy word, and creator of all things. He gave His Son to offer life through Jesus Christ, salvation, that every man might speak with Him in moments of meditation.
Put your dreams away for now. I won't see you for some time. I am lost in my mind. I get lost in my mind. Mama once told me, you're already home when you feel love. I am lost in my mind. I get lost in my mind. Filled. Won't you tell me, my brother? Won't you tell me, my brother, is there a star? Mind. Lost, I get lost in my mind.